Okay, Chevra, we are dedicating today's class to Le'ilui Nishmas Tzipora Bas Arya Halevi, whose yard site, if I'm not mistaken, is Tuesday night, Wednesday.
Thursday, Chafav.
Whose yard site is Chafav.
Thursday.
Shvat. So that's Wednesday night, Thursday.
Yes.
And let's get right into it. Okay. We have, at the end of the parsha of the week, we have a description, which for sure is very insightful, as to what did we experience when we stood around Sinai. Like, imagine you were there. What can you imagine happened? God was seen. What does that mean? And actually, there are words in this week's Parsha. I know this week is Parsha's Mishpatim. Last week was Yisrei. If you have a Chumash, I'll read them exact. If you have a Chumash. If not, I'll do the best I could, Baal Peh. It says, listen to these words, Vayiru es Elokei Yisrael. That they saw, they meaning the Jewish people, we saw the God of Israel, v'sachas raglov, v'tachat raglov, under his feet, go figure, k'maisa k'ma'ase livnat hasapir. Under his feet, there was the appearance of livnas hasapir. Now, the words livnas hasapir, from the classic, Rashi, beginning with Rashi, that the word livnat, lamed veiz nun sof, comes from the root of levena. A levena means a brick. Sapir means sapphire. Under his feet was kim ma'ase, like the, let's say, appearance of a sapphire brick, says Rashi, that since we who were standing there, we just came out of Egypt, and the specific agony of Egypt was connected to bricks, as the Torah writes. On the side, we did not build the pyramids. We did not build the pyramids. The pyramids are built out of stone, not bricks. Even levena. The big difference between a stone and a brick is that a natural stone will last relative forever. Nothing is forever. Right? Only diamonds are forever, but that's also, it's an even. It's a stone. A brick, which is really a man-made building block, you take earth, you make it into cement, and then you put it into a kiln, you put it into this oven that burns on very high temperatures, and it actually really hardens it. For sure, they last, but they don't last anything near as a stone. And I'm just going just to understand that what Paray did to us, particularly to us, to the Jewish people, to the descendants of Yaakov, to Yisrael, was that we didn't even fire up the bricks properly, on purpose. He did not allow us to do it, which means that everything that we built, we witnessed its demise. That was the Avodat Perech. What is Avodas Perech? Avoida, we know. We worked. Perach, the way Chazal interpret, I don't know if that's, is that a modern Hebrew word?
Perach, it's flower.
I know. Perachim, I know. But I'm curious whether Perachim is with the Ches. I think it's with the Ches. This is with the Chof.
But they also said, I remember learning this earlier, that you start with a Perach in a nice way, they told them, but then they make them work hard.
Very good, so very good. That's a Remes. Like okay, very nice. Like
the Perach is Chet.
Okay. So what he did was, yeah, I quoted the words correctly, that perach means work that crushes your soul. And what work crushes your soul? When you see that your work has no purpose. Futile. Futile means build a pyramid or whatever that we were building, but build it with raw material that, like, a year after you built it, it comes back to earth, and then build it again. So you know that what you're doing, that's crushing labor. Avodas Perach. So the Levena had a unique connection to our tzara. So that's what Rashi says, that God wanted us to see by Sinai that He sees the bricks in our lives. Imoi anoichi betzara. Imoi anoichi betzara, we would love for God to take away the tzara. I mean, if you're here, God doesn't do that always. But whatever God does, He's with us. And that was interesting. That's from the few things that you write. First of all, it's beautiful, Rashi. So, v'tachas raglov, kemaisa livna sasaper. The Rambam, instead of saying livnat from the Lashon of Leveno, the Rambam says livnat from the Lashon of white. This is very, very significant. And just for the record, that white doesn't mean white. White means transparent. Very important. The Rambam says that.
I'm sorry, I'm asking.
That's okay. That Rambam says, Livnas hasapir. Rashi says, Livnas means a brick, a sapphire brick. The Rambam says, Livnat milashon lavon, white. A white sapphire, first of all, our sapphires are blue. White doesn't mean white like the napkin. White means like the water. Clear. Clear sapphires. Very significant. I'll go to the Rambam in a moment. And just to tie it up, and the end of the pasuk is Ucheetzem Hashemayim Lotoyev, and as a pure sky. Under God's feet, there was the appearance of the pure blue sky. I want to go with the Rambam. We're up to the Rambam. We'll come back to Rashi, and then the Alter Rebbe says something, and I think it's very relevant. At least negative knowledge, not positive knowledge. I'll tell you what I mean with that. So the Rambam says that just like when you look at the skies, what color are the skies? What does it look like to me? Blue, but I know that it's not blue. The skies have no color. Why is it blue? Because it's reflecting back, or because of the oxygen, or because it's reflecting. So he says that when we looked at God, we knew that on one hand, God is transparent, which means you can't see Him. And whatever it is that we saw was a reflection of ourselves. And these two things that Rambam elaborates and Hasidus elaborates a lot, and these are good things just to be, we all know this, but it's good to have the right words, and halavai, we should have even better words, that the more transparent something is, the better of a mirror they can be. Let me say even simpler words. If your mirror is smudged, everything in the mirror will have the smudge. The more pure, the more toyar, toyar tahara also means pure. Pure, don't get mystical, don't get halachic, pure, transparent. No color of its own, then the better of a reflector it becomes. For good and bad. I'm gonna speak more words about it. Rashi, sapphire. Rambam, white, pure. The whole question is, we saw God. Vayiru es Elokei Yisrael. What does that mean? They saw God and under their feet, under God's feet, Kamaisa Livna Sasaper. There's a lot to talk about here. The Alter Rebbe wrote a maimer that he explains every part of this verse. I'll share some of it, but I want to very much connect it into Rashi and the Rambam. Even though the Alter Rebbe in the maimer quotes Rashi more, but I understand this to be very much connected to the Rambam. If you guys remember, if you women remember, I don't know how many years ago, I think it was 6 years ago, that every year, Shavuos, we spend the whole night learning. For me, it's great. I'm the talker. Talking is easy. Listening is much harder through the night. And every year or something else. And years back, we took a mimer, the Rebbe's mimer, I hope the opening line will come to me, that the Bishah Shemoisha Alalamarim. This is a mimer based on a medrash that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the heavens, the whole Maisa, the angels were against it, and they told God, don't give it to him, give it to us. And instead of God defending Moshe, God told Moshe, go defend yourself. And I want to just on the side, what's came to me right now is that one of the steps that we all have to do to be worthy of receiving the Torah is that we have to learn how to defend ourselves, meaning how to defend our position. And the challenge with defending our position is not when we're ignorant. No, the challenge of properly defending our position versus improperly defending our position, this is important, is that if I am defending my position because of my ego, then I'm not connected to God. And if I'm defending my position because this is the right position, that's a good place to be at. And the challenge we all have is that we don't know which is which. How many times, personal, when someone attacked something that you said, not you, or even you, sometimes I know someone I'm defending, it's the ego. I feel it. It's coming from my ego. And sometimes we think it's not coming from the ego. I'm not defending me. I'm defending the Rebbe. I'm defending Lubavitch. But it's my ego. Even worse, it's so bad that it's covered up with a sheker and nothing is kosher there. Gets distorted, connected to the stopping. No, so God wants to give the Torah. There's a question whether it should be given down on earth or given in the heavens. Who's going to benefit from it being given on earth? Who will benefit? Moshe. So you would think that Moshe can tell God, Ani nogea bedavar, right? But there's a conflict of interest. How can I defend the position if I benefit from it? So you would think that ideally God should, you know what humility is? Say, you know what? I don't know where I'm coming from. God, you determine. Right? Ask someone else to decide for you. Give up your authority in the name of humility. That's not humility. That's called cop-out. That's called weakness. That makes that person unworthy of getting the title. We have to get that place where I'm aware of the pitfall of defending my position from my ego. I know Moshe Rabbeinu knew that he stands to benefit by receiving the title. He was alive then. He wanted for the title to be given here. But when he's going to defend the position, he cannot be coming from self-interest. He has to be coming from the emes. Go do that. It's very difficult. But that step was needed for you to get to trade. It's going to be connected to what we'll talk about in a moment. Okay, that's just on the side, if you can leave that on the side. So in that mimer, the Rebbe gave a mimer in year 1965. It's a very, very, very abstract mimer. So this is on the side, not on the side. This is a mimer that explains mirrors. You remember that? It was Gan Eden. Only thing is, it was so until where we got where we wanted to get, and people were really, we were going on a journey, it was like a trip, better than psychedelics. It was Gan Eden. That it was so abstract, I remember that at the end of the night, if you were to ask me 5 minutes later, what is the neshama, it would be hard to say it. But let me share with you to encapsulate something very profound, which is like this. What I'm saying now is also not going to be the topic of now, but it's connected. It's deeply connected. These are gold gifts that God gave us in the Torah. God is infinite. However you are to understand it, we're limited. That we understand. Let me just say that all of us are dying to be less limited. Yeah, can we identify with that? Whatever the limitation is, like we're chalishing, like we would give anything not to be in English, an American. I want to be free. What's this pursuit of freedom? They don't want to be limited. Okay. So using the Torah, okay, you want to be free, connect to God. God is free. God is infinite. How do we do that? I'm not talking in my behavior. We're talking about inside of me. How do I How do I move towards God? How do I merge? How do I connect my life with God and not lose my life? Because God is infinite. Merging with God, becoming infinite, is not what we're looking for. We're too attached. So the mashal the Maimer gives over there is that creation was God went from infinity to the world through the process of Tzimtzum. But you went from Shitut, from a plainness, purity, plainness, to sophistication, to things that are composites of many other things. Look at everything in this world. It's amazing how they all work together, but there's stuff. The difference is infinite. What happens then is that world projects itself back in God's infinity, like onto a mirror. It's like you looking in a mirror. Now think about it. Are you in the mirror? What's the answer to that question? When you look in the mirror, are you in the mirror?
In the mirror?
Yeah.
No.
I think no is not the right answer. That will be very scary. That's a sign that we're no longer in body. Just know after 180, when you look in the, when we'll look in the mirror and we'll see nothing back, that's a simon that we're dead. And that's one of the reasons why in a house of a shiva you cover the mirrors. Because it's very spooky to just imagine you look in a mirror and you don't see yourself back. Oy gewalt. So when you look in the mirror, at least right now, thank God, you see yourself looking back at yourself. Are you in the mirror?
Reflection of you.
I know that, but
so it's not, yeah,
okay, I don't mean you're very good. So in other words, you can't say yes, you can't say no.
Yeah.
It's nishtahed, nishtahin. Yeah, I know that I'm not in the mirror, but hold on. But there's a reflection of me. There's some merging with the mirror. It's abstract, it's not tangible. Vaharaya, when I walk away, I hope I'm not there. That's also scary. Imagine you walk away, but you're still in the mirror. That we're not looking for that. But that's a mashal that the Rebbe gives in the Maimer of the connection between us and God. That on one hand, we don't affect God the way we affect each other. So people think, well, either or, right? Does God care about me? Is God affected by me? I'm davening. Does he care? In one of these questions, that whatever your answer, you'll be wrong. Or if the teacher wants to make you feel good, whatever your answer is, you're right. Because yes, you affect God, and no, you don't affect God. When we learned about the mirror, even before getting deep, it was such a good muscle just to have some physical phenomena that we know of, that's much more accurate. There is a connection. The mirror is picking me up. The mirror is reflecting me back to me. And then the Maimer went on to say something very deep, that when I see myself back in the mirror, I'm getting not only myself back, I'm getting the mirror's infinity back with it. So when we are projected into God, so to say, God reflects us back to us. And what we get the second time, before God created, it went from God to us. One-way street. Once we exist, we look up back into him. He's looking at us. There's a connection. And we are reflected by God. And then when that reflection comes back, in our reflection is the infinity of the mirror. And let's leave that. And that's said enough. And I'm going to use this in a half an hour from now, but just this vague concept. That the Rambam is saying that when we looked up in the heavens, you know what we saw? We saw Livnas HaSaper. We saw pure sapphires. We saw Ke'etzem HaShomayim LaToyer. We saw the pure skies. But the reason why we're using these examples is because when we look up into the heavens, the sky is not pure to us. The sky has blue. The sky has already an imprint of us in the sky. The reason why the sky is able to pick it up is because the sky is emptied of itself. If the sky would be full of itself, it would not be able to mirror back. Same thing with a mirror. There has to be glass. There has to be something that has in it emptiness. no dirt for it, for your image to come back. It has to be flat. It cannot be fardreit. If you're gonna have a mirror that's crooked, that's bent, who knows what's gonna come back? Funny and scary.
But the sky's issue isn't that the sky is dirty. It's us.
Very good, very good, very good, very good. Okay. That's all the Rambam. The Rashi speaks about the brick sapphire. That we saw bricks. God was saying that he knows of the bricks. He was with us when we were suffering with the bricks. These two things are so deeply connected through the Alter Rebbe. And let me approach it with the following. All of us experience how something that's beyond us is trying to communicate to us. All of us have that experience. Most easily recognized is when we dream. I am not saying, I'm just quoting what the Gemara says. It's not that all the dreams that we have are voices that are coming from beyond, or voices from our beyond, like our unconscious or subconscious communicating to us consciously. Or a malach, however you want to word this, or God himself. No, we know that some dreams are nothing more than projections of our own thoughts. Okay? Even if we will take this literally, no question, and we all know this, that something is being communicated. We have a dream, and what does the dream use to communicate whatever it wants to communicate? The imagery that we saw in the dream. None of those imageries should be taken as a rule always literally the way they looked. We all know that the whole Gemara is about associations, that this means that, the other things mean something else. And even if people didn't learn this in the Torah, it's amazing how almost universally people know this. The person in the dream isn't necessarily, or I would go further to say, it's not the real person that you know in real life. It's not that way. It's all a part of you, really. So when you dream about a person in the dream, what you're really looking at is you're looking at you, a part of you that you don't see. Especially when you have a dream with someone that you don't like. You're dreaming about you, the part of you that you don't like, and the koyach of the dream is using something to inform you. You don't even see that in you. All of the parts of the dreams are parts of yourself. All of the characters, all of the players. Always. Some people say, no, it can't be. I get it. That person, I can see. That's the whole point. That's the chiddush. Halavai, we dream of a character that we can relate to, because now you're getting real information. You're getting information that you never would have come to on your own, because I don't see myself being that person. No. I'm against everything that person represents to me. Yeah, and no, that in me, I have that in me also. The reason why I hate that person so much is because I hate myself that much. Always, always. Okay, now let's think like this. I'm sorry, Renate, okay, it's good, so good this. Yeah, no, when people hear something myself and you laugh, that means it's emes. Because it really instigates. Because something is revolting. It's revolting because you hit it on the head over here. Okay. This is now not by the dream. I'll tell you what the Alter Rebbe says. I'm using the dream as my mashal. There is a two-step process that happens. Number one, something beyond us. Again, malach, neshama, subconscious, superconscious, some source of wisdom within you, without you, is telling you something. It's telling you something way beyond the image that you're seeing. Just like, now comes the Alter Rebbe, when people talk to each other, simplify, words that we use are communicating either ideas or feelings. Let's leave it simple. the idea or the feeling is so much more than the words that are being used. But if the person expresses oneself properly, if the listener listens properly, and always beginning and ending with God's help, it's amazing how your thought can be understood by the listener through the words. The words is just a channel. The thought idea. The greatest of ideas can be put into simple words. Same thing with feelings. Emes, that at times we are at loss to find words because the feeling is bigger than the words. But let's be simple. Words are to do that. I want to go back to the dream. The images, the picture, the movie picture that we see in the dream, it's not the images, it's not the people, it's something is being conveyed. And in the wisdom of the dream, those were the images that you were shown. We don't know what to do with most dreams. We have to now translate it. But you see, this is going to be the second translation. The first translation was the dream itself. The dream itself is not the pure idea or feeling that the neshama was communicating to you, or the malach, or God. No, the message was downgraded already into the picture. It already got translated in the picture. Then we take, I'm going to go to a person who's a dream interpreter, right? You go to Yosef HaTzadik and you say, this is what I saw. I saw this and I saw this and I saw that. Then that person, with God's help, is going to tell you, this and this and that. And they're going to give you words of to what it means. The idea in the picture and then, or in the dream, and now the dream has to be interpreted. In the words of the Alter Rebbe, God has no image. This is before the Alter Rebbe. This is 101 Judaism. God, however you are to understand God, if it has an image, it's not God. God cannot be seen. So whenever an image is being used, it's not God. It's a certain insight into what? Into a certain glimpse of understanding, a certain glimpse into a feeling of godliness. And that glimpse is expressed in the words and in the letters of our holy tongue, in the Aleph Beis and in Lashon Kodesh. Which is why the Ten Commandments, amazing. God has no finger. God has no tools the way we have tools. Physical stones out of sapphire came back engraved with the form of letters that we use in a Sefer Torah. Amazing. Mamish, it was God's, we use the word Torah. The Torah should not be limited into wisdom. Torah is somehow, God is in the Torah, which is amazing. And the big infinite God is in these, in the Ten Commandments. I know these words have to be properly understood, but this is correct. These words are correct. But that's already a translation, right? God into the words. God is not the words. What's the next step? That we have to now understand these words. Our understanding of the words is step number two. If I am able to learn in Hebrew, don't take this literally, but if I'm able to learn in Lashon HaKodesh, the Alter Rebbe says that would be tantamount to us seeing that under God's feet there are stones. But we didn't see stones, we saw bricks. Brick is something that we have to make. All of the 70 languages were made by mankind. Hebrew was made by God. So when you go and you translate the Hebrew into English, this is already, you downgraded it the second time. Means even in the Hebrew, you have the words. You don't have God. You have to somehow figure out to see the real essence in the word. That's when you have the original word. The brick, that's the whole maimed of the Alter Rebbe, that the Jewish people were unable to see beyond mystically words. They were unable to see into the world of Atzilus. They only saw under God's feet. That's why it says Elokei, not Vayiru et Hashem Yisrael. You would think they saw Yudkei Vavkei. They couldn't see that, but they saw. And the example that the Alter Rebbe is giving, which will describe the distortion, is that we saw sapphire, we saw bricks, and we didn't see stones. Let me tell you why it's important to know that what we are seeing is already distorted. First of all, it's very good to know that what we're seeing is distorted. That in itself is very important. Because when a person thinks that I got it, I know it, first of all, no one has it, no one knows it. And the little that we know is very limited. Again, we all want to be less limited. So when we fix, this is it, how can you know more? Oh, this topic I already know. I know when I come to the understanding that even at Sinai, what we saw was it was already twice translated, whatever it is, God, from God into Hebrew, and we didn't see the Hebrew, we didn't see the stones, we saw the other language. Or the Alter Rebbe is using literally that when we, if a person is learning in English, how far are we from the Torah? We are two steps away from the essence. When you learn Hebrew, you're one step away. What's the essence? God. But we're not learning God, we're learning the Torah. But the Torah in Hebrew has God in him.
I think I got confused. So a stone is a letter? Is a brick a word?
A stone is a letter in Hebrew. From stones you build homes. The home built out of stones will be the Chumash, the way we have it in the book, written in the Holy Tongue. And when that is translated to any other of the 70 languages, it goes from being a house of stone to a house of bricks.
Okay, so a house
of bricks is a man-made. Man-made meaning, and I'm giving my mashal right now, I want to make this relevant, because not everyone is looking for God as much as, for me it's a good mashal. When you have a dream, and when you know in your bones that there was something, there was a message here, the more we know the challenge of getting the message, listen to my words, the more of a chance you'll get the message. What is the biggest challenge? The challenge is even the image should not be taken literally. Like I said before, you see in your real life, there is a person that is your foe. It doesn't have to mean, it could be it is, could be it's not. Could be it goes together, that whatever you think is in that person is in you, and you need to see that. That's why they are in your freaking dream. Like, let me be. I made a decision not to interact with Chaim Yankel. Why is he coming to my chaloimus? Who gave them the right? And the answer is because he's already in me, because it's me. Now, just that image is already a symbol, let's say. Okay, I like this mashal of a dream, because the Gemara calls whatever you see a symbol, it represents something. It's not the thing. That's why the Gemara says, this means that. This means that. In other words, nothing is what it is. Nothing is what it is. Everything is a symbol. Even after you see the symbols, now you have to go and interpret it. So imagine the challenge the neshama wants to tell you something. So first, it has to use symbols that you are familiar with, that already have a meaning for you, that are, and it has to use it and put together a whole thing, a whole mice, and it gives it to you. Let me say these words. When I have a dream, when you have a dream, the moment you already decided that this is what it means, you're completely finished. Because even if you're gonna share it with someone, the way it used to be, the Gemara speaks about it, people that were able, like to Yosef HaTzadik, let's go to the biblical, who was someone who was able to tell you what you're seeing, if you are sharing it already with your own input, you're excited, because you know what it means, you're hoping this is what it means, you have an agenda, it fits, the way you're going to describe it will guarantee that the one who's listening will never get it right, because they're hearing the whole thing off. What do you need to do? You need to be pure objective, without understanding, without an agenda. Even if it might mean a disaster. Oh my God, I don't want it to mean that. I'm going to do anything I could. It shouldn't mean that. Don't do that. Then there's a greater chance that when you go ahead and you take these images and then you translate them, that translation will be close enough to reflect the images, to reflect the real message. The Alter Rebbe says that Moshe Rabbeinu, because of him being on a higher level, the Torah that he got was the Torah of stone. Also not, God is God, he's a human being, but he got the pure. This verse is that we didn't get the pure. And us knowing it is the remedy. At least I know, if you tell a person who's looking in the mirror, I want you to know that the mirror is distorted. And the mirror is going to make you look bigger than what you think. Tell it to, they'll be very happy. No, or it's distorted that you look much worse, that you don't tell the person, unless it's true. We have to know where our weak points are to have a fighting chance of overcoming it with God's help. And this is a very deep moment. First of all, it's very humbling. It's very humbling and very liberating. Very humbling and liberating, because when people learn, and we are living in a generation that everyone is learning now. People are learning, and they're really learning. And they come to certain conclusions, which is the only way we know how to do things. We learn and we come to a conclusion. Just knowing that whatever it is that we know is nisht. It's not. This is not to make a person be, baseless. I have no foundation. You're telling me that what I know, I don't know. What do I do with that? I'm kaput. I'm finished. No, actually, it's very liberating to know that this was a translation. This wasn't an interpretation. This was a way of hopping, way of understanding. Let's just look at the wisdom. The very fact that we are learning now in English, when it comes to God and Yiddishkeit and Ruchnius, we are off on purpose. That's the example of looking up into the heavens. When you look up into the heavens and you see a blue sky, you're not going to be fooled by thinking that the atmosphere is blue. You know that the atmosphere is transparent. There is no color. It's lavan. Why does it look to me? Why does it look to me like it's blue? Because I am blue. Which means, this is Gavaldi, that all of my pre-notions, all of my ideas are corrupting all of the new ideas that I'm getting. I'm very happy with this. Because I'm already biased. I already know what I know. And if I know what I know very deeply, and it was confirmed 80 times in my life over, then everything else that comes my way that I will associate with that, I already know. And I'll never know something deeper, ever. There's a story of the Tzemach Tzedek. It's a cute story, and it's a very deep story. The Tzemach Tzedek was raised by the Alter Rebbe, and by the Alter Rebbe's wife, Rebbetzin Sterno, because of his mother's passing very young, Rebbetzin Devoid Aleya. Speaking about the passings of a Rebbetzin, today is the Yahrzeit Hilula of our Rebbetzin. And the story goes, when he was 7 or 8 years old, he was yearning to spend even more time with his grandfather when his grandfather would teach. And there was a class that the Alter Rebbe would give Friday night to selected people. It was a class on the Zohar. By the way, those classes are compiled after Shabbos. And we have now the Alter Rebbe's, it's called Biurim on the Zohar, from the Alter Rebbe. He wrote his insights into the Zohar. And the Tzemach Tzedek wanted to join the class, and the Alter Rebbe told him that when you'll be older, you can join. He was a 7 or 8 year old. He did not take that nicely. In the Alter Rebbe's home, like in all the homes then, especially in the cold climates, homes were heated with firewood, and the way they made the systems work for an entire house is that the firewood place would be somewhere in the middle, and from there, vents would go, or ducts would go to many different rooms. So heating, you don't have to put in every room firewood. Fire would be in one place, and all of the environments would somehow be heated up. So if you wanted to go into the Alter Rebbe's room, I'm sitting now over here, Mishpachas first, so if you just look on my right, those vents. It means every room, in the modern world, you have vents. This is even low to the ground. And if you would take off the frame, some of these passageways are quite big, especially for a 7-year-old. So he wanted to go into the class. Behind the Alter Rebbe's chair was the vent. So he wasn't allowed over there, but he was in the kitchen. So he crawled through that ventilation system, and he placed himself right behind his grandfather, behind the grades, so no one saw that he was there. Machaya, and he's listening. In the Vaila, it was very cold, just to know, on the side, the word Shabbos Goy, which is not a derogatory word, just to know where it came from, is that even though as a rule, whatever I am not allowed to do as a Jew on Shabbos, I should not tell to a Goy to do it for me. That's a correct statement. There are exceptions, but that's a correct statement. But when there is a need, especially if it's connected to health, I am allowed to tell a Goy to do something, even though I'm not allowed to do it for me. The classic example was, in those days, whoever lit up a fireplace, not the fake ones, the real ones, I don't care how much wood you put in there, how big the logs are, it's not going to last more than a couple of hours. It doesn't work that way. It gets burnt up. So when you're living winter, think about it, in Russia, or now in New York, or whatever, it was minus 10. What are you going to do before Shabbos? You can't keep your house warm for the whole Shabbos unless someone will add firewood. There was no way around it. So every village needed to have someone. That was his job. He would go from house to house, probably every 3 hours, and he would add logs to the fire. This story happened during a time of the year that during the day there was no need for fire, because when that fireplace was being used, the Tzemach Tzedek would not be able to crawl through. But at some time at night, it got cold, so someone called a goy, and they lit up the fire, unbeknownst that there's a kid, there's a 7-year-old. And I don't know exactly to what point, at some point when they discovered he was in there, he already fainted, probably from the lack of breathing. And the story goes that the Alter Rebbe's wife was upset with her husband, and she told him that, look at you, that you, not his fault, your fault. Of course, because he wants to learn Torah, you are preventing him from learning Torah. He almost died. She says, a tragedy almost happened to us. Part of the response was not to her. I know this. I'm not saying this as a joke, because when someone's spouse is upset, responding to that with what I'm saying is inappropriate. This is something for us to learn from. He was talking to me. The Alter Rebbe said, first, I know that he gave a bracha that he should have a long life. He gave a bracha to his grandson. And he said that the experience of the getting of the Torah begins with fire. He said that when God met Moshe by Har Sinai, he met him by the burning bush. And part of the Sinai experience was we experienced fire. And the Alter Rebbe expounds of this thought in the Maimer, that their ideal way of making bricks is by burning it up in a kiln. Fire is needed. In other words, when a person hears the Alter Rebbe saying that all of the Torah that we have is it's a reflection of a reflection. It's a reflection of a reflection. And every time it gets reflected, something is lost. When it goes from God into the Hebrew, something is lost. When it goes then from the Holy Tongue, from Lashon HaKodesh, not Hebrew, Lashon HaKodesh, into any of the languages, again, it gets distorted. No matter how white it is, you look up into the heavens, it's blue. So now what? It's not to make a person feel like they're helpless. First of all, like I mentioned, just knowing that what we're getting, what I'm hearing already, I have an agenda. It's like when I'm sharing you my dream, I already understand it the way I understand it. So I'm very limited in what I'm teaching because I already understood it that way. So it doesn't help for me just to open up the book and to learn a new mimer because I'm going to deeply already understand it. And with the benefits and with the deficiencies. So first of all, knowing that our understanding is limited is a refuas hanefesh mamish, takes away the arrogance, at least to some degree, makes a person feel more humble, it makes a person more open to hearing something, even if it goes against everything they understand. And the Alter Rebbe speaks about, in the Maimer, that part of that fire is the burning desire of getting to know God better. That means that when people have to have a burning desire to know the truth, to know. Nothing comes for free. We know that in the physical world. That is mirroring a deeper truth. That when we are trying to know God's word, I want to get to know God. I want to get to know my neshama better. None of this comes without fire. There is a fire means in the Maimer Boot, the desire. It's a representation of desire. The deep desire, you have to really want. And fire also has to do with that which takes apart the form of what is. When you burn a tree down, the tree is no longer going to be here. We spoke about this last week and 2 weeks ago, that a big part of learning is not to learn new. If a person would have a dream, they would know what it means if they already wouldn't have all their interpretations. But we already have all our interpretations. We already have all of our judgments. We already have that. That ruins everything. So then I'm closed. An image that can mean good. For me, it meant bad. So I decided it's bad. All of this, I want to apply, going back to the Maimer that we learned, Shavuos night, that there is a Pasuk in Mishlei. And the Pasuk says that Kamayim Hapanim Alpanim, Kein Lev Ha'adam Ba'adam. That just like the pshat, a water is reflected in water. When you look in water, your reflection comes back. The same is the heart of man in man. The same is the heart of man in man, which means that a heart feels a heart, which literally would mean that if I feel, let's say, not positive feelings towards you, it's a reflection that you don't feel such positive feelings towards me. That's the pshat. And where the Maimer flips it 180, which is very helpful, and when something is turned around in the opposite way, don't erase what you knew. The literal stance, but it doesn't become limiting. One of the questions that the Rebbe asks in the Maimer, that how can you compare one to the other? When a face is reflected in the water, what was in the water before you looked into it? Nothing. A mirror. Water would be a mirror. Nothing. There's nothing there. So when you come, it's only you. So what's reflected back to you is accurate. It's you. But if I look at another person's heart, even if that person has a feeling towards me, but I already had a feeling towards them before, it's not an accurate comparison. It's not an accurate comparison. It's a very arrogant statement to think that I'm pure, I'm objective. So if I have a negative feeling, aha, that's because you have a negative feeling towards me. Think about the arrogance of that statement. Maybe the opposite. Maybe I have a bad feeling about you and you are mirroring it back to me. It's like looking for your reflection in someone else's face. What, you think you're going to see your face? No, their face was there before your face. Just from that question, the question is the answer. The point is that yes, that a mirror reflects you. And another person, a lot of what you pick up when you interact with the other, a lot of it, if you feel good feelings, it's coming from them. If you feel uneasy, it's coming from them. Yes, but some of it can be coming from you. Some of it can be called what we call a projection. actually, it could actually be that that person has neutral feelings towards you or even good feelings. But there's no way you can pick that up because I'm so filled with jealousy or negative feelings towards the other and I'm not projecting it on them. Chutzpah. So it's not Kamayim Apanim Kain. It's that and the opposite. And I'll take your question. I'm coming back to understanding that I think we become enlightened in only seeing how distorted everything already is with the prior understanding. Not distorted in a bad way, with a limiting way. Yes.
It's interesting because some people can have the same characteristics as another person, but in that person you don't get annoyed by them, and the other person can do the exact same thing, but then
Because you're getting annoyed from something else. You're getting annoyed from that which is behind the characteristic. You're reacting.
Maybe doing the same exact thing, but that person, it irritates me, and the other person.
Maybe the intent. In other words, you're picking up something not face value. It has to be different, in my understanding, in my distorted understanding.
You feel what I'm saying or not?
I know. Okay, let me.
What is the behind the scenes of that?
If two people are being very. Good attitude, optimistic, upbeat, just as an example. One person is genuinely a person who is optimistic. The other person has a lot of doubts and questions, but they force themselves to be upbeat because that is their limited misunderstanding of Trachgut v'Zayngut, they have a misunderstanding about that, or for whatever other reason, or because they want to project that image of themselves because they find that to be more attractive than to be who they are, or any other reason. So they can mamish look the same. They can be in the same place, but one person is genuinely there and one person is there by force. And one second. Now, if I am getting irritated by that, that person is like, yeah, good morning, everything is wonderful. If I'm getting irritated, without doubt, my irritation is, why did I pick up on that? I picked up on that. That's where the metaphor is accurate. It's mirroring because I have that illness. I force. I go against who I am at the moment in the name of an idea, in the name of a concept. Or even worse, when you mix the Torah in, because as I state, because then that misunderstanding you can't fight against, because you're debating against something that the person thinks in their ignorance, this is what it says. So you lost. So if I do that, one of the ways that God will try to enlighten me of my wrong path is by bringing into my life such a person who does that, and I'll be irritated with that. But when I'm irritated, I am seeing me. I'm irritated with me. If I would not have that, I wouldn't care if they have it. Knock yourself out. You know, there's a big difference between hugging and strangling, but it's a fine line. So there's hugging positivity, and some people strangle the death out of it. Because when you there's and it takes a long time to get the difference between. I know, yeah. Trachgut v'Zayngut. But how do you do that? Just because it's an ideal, the way we do it, the way we get there, is very consequential, and I think we all pick up on that. Or there's something, you're getting irritated, you're picking up on something. I'm beginning with that. So that is accurate, that people mirror each other. The next step is that are you picking it up in them, or are you seeing yourself in them? And I don't know. To be open to both possibilities. Great tzaddikim said that. Great tzaddikim said that the way they sensed, like they were mentalists, they knew what the other person is thinking. Big tzaddikim. And I heard these words. He says that if a person is very clear, clean, but it's not clean the way you misunderstand clean. They're clear, they're pure. And they know this is such a gift. They really put themselves aside the right way. They have no ego. They pick up everything everyone else is thinking. That's a pure mirror. If I clear myself, which is something that I am unable to do, as I would assume most people. So there's no forcing here. Any spiritual journey gets ended by force. Always. Any coercion stops it. When one is gifted with the ability through a lot of work and God's help and work of clearing oneself, then they pick up the other person and they know it's not them. Ke'etzam hashamayim l'toyer, livnas hasaper. And everyone else has a mixture. We still have that ability to pick up from the other. We don't lose that. It gets confusing because I'm picking up me and the other. And I don't know which is which. What's me? What's you? And even that which I am picking up, I don't understand that itself. Everything, every feeling, we don't understand it properly. We're very limited. We already judged it. Oh, this is bad. Can you imagine growing into a place where the same thing is good? Or going to the real place where you have something and you don't judge it? I don't know how to do that at all. I know the words. Is it good or bad? It happens automatically. Do I like it? Don't I like it? Do I want to get closer to this or do I want to run away from that? Right away. Being able just to be with it the way it is, I never saw that. You gotta do it. You gotta be worthy for it. You have to really schwitz on that. All of that is the fire that Alter Rebbe is talking about. That there's avoida. Fire represents avoida. Fire represents wanting to come to the truth. That when a person will be able, even though it's a double concealment, to have a better insight into the emes, which is something that we are all looking for, because the ultimate trait is emes. Maybe be worthy. The more we know how off we are currently in our understanding, language from Lashon HaKodesh, from the essence, then that pain, the pain of it, the humility of it, not just the humbling, it's a humiliation, the lessening of the ego, and the desire of coming to the truth from a right place. Many people desire to know the truth also from their ego. I want to know. That's it. Till you get it. And then we'll be worthy. And then when Mashiach will come, it says that everyone will know me. God says, everyone will know. Everyone will know without a teacher. You'll know you'll be your teacher. Why can't you be your teacher? Why can't I be my teacher now? Because I don't know if it's coming from my ego, just with that. I don't know where it's coming from. And I don't know what I know. What I know is misunderstood. My whole knowledge is misunderstood. So these are very uplifting thoughts that I have. For me, it's uplifting and it's freeing. And it opens up endless new possibilities.